Chapter 8. Amanda. The bar didn't close until 2 a.m., but the doorman started his shift at 10, and he threw Amanda and Wendy out at 11. Even though the management thought the women had enjoyed more than enough alcohol for one evening, neither Amanda nor Wendy could be persuaded, and they adjourned to Wendy's apartment off Broadway for a nightcap. They fell into the elevator, giggling and cold. It was a nice building, much grander than Amanda's. The apartment was bigger, too. A large kitchen with room for a full-size dining table. The 5-seater couch in the lounge area had been separated from the kitchen by a floor-to-ceiling bookcase. There was even a view of the skyline. Amanda flopped down onto the couch. She was feeling tired but good. Wendy was a riot. There was a strange freedom enjoyed by her new friend, and Amanda found it just as intoxicating as the liquor. She had smiled tonight and even laughed. It had been a long time since she'd done either of those things. She talked to Pharaoh, but always about Jess, Luis, and Crone. It wasn't a real conversation, not like tonight. Wendy returned from the kitchen with a pair of Bloody Marys, a large stick of celery in each tall glass. "Dinner is served," said Wendy, sitting beside her. Amanda hadn't realized how hungry she was until the first bite of celery. She devoured it quickly, not tasting the vodka amongst the tomato and pepper.
"I had fun tonight," said Amanda. "Thank you. I don't remember the last time I..."
"How long has it been since, you know?"
Amanda swallowed a mouthful of the drink, said,
"6 months since I lost them."
Wendy nodded.
"I remember the first 6 months, and the next. It's only the first 2 years that are the hardest," she said with a smile.
Amanda spat out a laugh.
"How long has it been for you?" she asked.
3 years, 11 months, 12 days, said Wendy.
"And it's easier?" asked Amanda.
Wendy stood, looked out the window at the city lights.
"It becomes different, more distant, I guess. The pain changes. It dulls. It's always there, but it doesn't always rip your heart out, you know?"
Amanda didn't know, but she nodded anyway.
"What happened to you?" she asked.
Still with her eyes on the view, Wendy said,
"My daughter didn't come home from school one day. She was 15, used to the subways. I called the school. They said she'd left with the rest of her class. She wasn't the type to run away. She'd been having some problems, but wouldn't open up to me. A couple of weeks before she disappeared, I had found her in the bathroom cutting her forearm with a razor. We talked about it. She said it was just a thing, nothing specific. Teenager anxiety. She even agreed to go talk to a counselor. When she didn't come home that day, I called all her friends. Her cell phone was off. Then I called the police that night. They weren't interested at first. Kids that age sometimes wander, but they nearly always come back. Some don't. Rebecca never came home."
Amanda gazed at Wendy's reflection in the window. With the backlighting, she could see her clearly, the sky outside somewhat obscured by the bright glow on the glass. She focused on Wendy's expression, a blank, deadened look. Just for a moment, Amanda wasn't sure if she saw rain running down the window pane or if Wendy was crying. She got up, put a hand on her shoulder.
"What happened?" asked Amanda.
Wendy sniffed and wiped her cheeks with her sleeve.
"I called the police again. This time they put out an alert. I searched her room, found a journal I'd never seen before. It was in her handwriting. She said in the journal she was having an affair with her music teacher, Mr. Quinn. He told her to keep it quiet, that he would hurt her or me if she told anyone. That's what the journal said. She was scared, my poor baby. The cops hauled him in and he denied everything. It's a Catholic school and they have the best lawyers. Her father took off when she was young and I raised her on my own, best I could. I never expected this. I never expected to ID her body. They found her in an abandoned lot. She'd been strangled. The police had the journal, but without Rebecca, there was no case against Quinn without some corroborating evidence. The DA said maybe it wasn't a diary, but fiction, a teenage fantasy.
Jesus.
I know what she wrote was the truth. It was so detailed. She even mentioned a birthmark he has on the inside of his thigh, near the groin. I thought that would be enough. How could she know that if he wasn't raping her? The cops wanted to nail him, but the DA said there wasn't enough to get past reasonable doubt. Quinn never even went to trial. He killed my little girl, and he's still in that fucking school, still teaching young girls, if you can believe that.
That's horrific. How can they do that?
They have power. They have the city councilors in their pockets all the way up to the mayor. That's why. And they don't care about those young girls. I've been wondering for the past 3 years when the next teenage girl is going to get Quinn's treatment and what he might do if she threatens to tell someone. That's why I don't buy into Betty's forgiveness. There is no forgiveness for scum like him. He deserves to fucking... She stopped short of using the word, hung her head. I'm sorry, said Wendy. You don't need to hear my problems.
Amanda stepped closer to Wendy and did something she hadn't done in months. She put both her arms around another human being, and Wendy reciprocated. Amanda felt like crying again, only it felt different, because for once, she didn't want to cry for those that she had lost. She wanted to cry for Wendy. For some time, the two women held each other and took whatever warmth and human decency they could from that embrace. Not long after, they finished their drinks in silence. Then Wendy said,
"You can crash on the couch if you like."
Amanda felt far too tired and loaded to brave the subway, and she was short on cab fare.
"Thank you, I will. That's really kind. I just need to use the bathroom," said Amanda.
She put her empty glass on the kitchen counter, made her way along the hallway. She put her hand on the door handle of the first room on the left and heard Wendy calling out from the kitchen.
"Don't go into that room. It's a little messy in there. Bathroom is second on the left."
Amanda clung to the sides of the small wooden dinghy. Another wave was coming, tall and black against the turbulent night sky, like a mountain roaring toward her out of the deafening storm. Cold sea water splashed over the side of the little boat, soaking her already wet clothes. The boat rose on the wave, higher and higher. The wind, rain, and water lashing her hair to her cheeks, stinging them. As the boat reached the crest of the wave and tilted over, she found that she could see all around her for miles. A beam of moonlight had broken the clouds, and she saw the towering waves beyond, and then, in the distance, she glimpsed a light, land. A small fire burning on a beach. Two people stood in the light of the flames, a man, tall and lean, and beside him a little girl with blonde hair. No matter how hard she tried to get to that beach, the dark waves threw her back. And then Amanda knew what would happen next. She had seen this before. Lived this before, dreamed this before. The boat capsized, and Amanda fell into the icy sea. The shock took her breath. The cold, ink-black water flooded into her mouth, and she opened her eyes, gasping for air. The back of her neck ached, and her head, too. She could see the city through a large window, and she remembered where she was. Amanda sat up on Wendy's couch, stretching her shoulders. The time on her iPhone read 7:20 a.m. Shit, she'd missed Crone's morning commute. Her head hadn't hurt like this in a long time. She got up slowly, put on her boots, and made her way to the kitchen, found water. She often had that same dream. It started not long after she was hospitalized following Louise's suicide. She told one of the counselors about it, and they said it was her subconscious working through her trauma. Recurring nightmares are common in those with PTSD. They can diminish with time and treatment. Amanda didn't want that. She liked the dream. She knew, one day, she could get through that storm to the little bonfire. She knew she would get to that beach once Crone was dead. His death would take her to the light. It would take her to Luis and Jess. The headache started beating a pulse in her head. It was getting worse. Wendy should have some Advil around here somewhere. Nothing in the kitchen cabinets, which she opened and closed soundlessly, reluctant to wake her host. There was a hallway off the kitchen, 3 doors, 2 on the left, 1 at the end of the hallway, slightly ajar. It was dark in that room, drapes drawn. Amanda made her way down the hall, peeked into the gloom at the far end. She could just make out the soles of Wendy's feet at the bottom of the bed, the sheets crumpled and spilled to the floor. Wendy snored softly. Last night, she had used the bathroom. There was a cabinet built into the mirror. There might be some painkillers in there. Then, she remembered something Wendy had said at the end of the evening. She'd told Amanda where the bathroom was, but she also seemed pretty adamant Amanda shouldn't go into the other room because it was messy. Amanda knew the feeling. After Jess and Louise died, it was a good 2 months before she even tried to clean the apartment. And yes, it was still embarrassing. She didn't want to embarrass Wendy, even though Amanda of all people would understand. The events at the end of the night came back to her a little clearer. And she remembered at the time thinking Wendy was making a lame excuse to keep Amanda out of that room. Now, Amanda couldn't help but feel curious about why Wendy would lie about it. Amanda tried the door closest to the kitchen, and it opened quietly. It wasn't a bathroom, and it sure as hell wasn't messy. A second bedroom that Wendy had converted into an office. A desk and chair in one corner, some plastic storage boxes stacked neatly in the opposite corner. The drapes were open. Amanda began to back out of the room and stopped. Wendy had seen Amanda's driver's license in the bar, had insisted upon it. She knew all about Amanda, and Amanda could not resist taking a closer look at what Wendy was so keen to hide. She listened, heard the faint sound of snoring from Wendy's bedroom, and then moved slowly into the office. There was a corkboard above the desk with documents and sticky notes nailed to it with dozens of little red pins. Amanda crept forward, scanned the board. There were newspaper articles on St. Patrick's High School, funding for a new science block, their new scheme on truancy, and one on their new pastoral care scheme. Maybe 20 or more articles. Some looked to be from the school's website. There were photos of the school in some of the news articles, with staff pictured at the front gates, shaking hands with bishops, businessmen, and other men in slick suits. There were 2 photographs that weren't from the newspapers. They were glossy photo print paper, but in black and white, and enlarged so that the image was grainy. A man, in his late 40s maybe, with dark hair. One was taken as he was getting into a car outside the school, another from further away, as he got out of the same car parked outside a house. The pictures were a little fuzzy, but it was clearly the same guy. Beneath the photos lay a map of Manhattan, with handwritten annotations too small for Amanda to read unless she got in real close. There was one more article, small and rectangular, hanging off the bottom of the corkboard. She suddenly felt uncomfortable. It was a photo of a young girl, teenager, blonde hair and pigtails, smiling with a pair of orthodontic braces in her hand. She looked happy, and her teeth looked perfect. It was the kind of photo a mom took of her daughter the first day she got her braces removed. Wendy's daughter had been a beautiful girl and would have grown into a greater beauty had she not met an evil man along the way. There was something underneath the photo, another printout from the web. She placed a finger at the bottom of the picture and tilted it so she could see what lay beneath. It was a death notice in the local newspaper for a 15-year-old girl. Amanda left the room and held her breath as she softly closed the door and tiptoed to the next one. This door was the bathroom, but there was no medicine cabinet, never mind a bottle of painkillers. Instead, she used the toilet, washed her face and hands, took a pea of toothpaste and ran it around her teeth and gums with her finger, spat. She opened the bathroom door. This time, she wasn't concerned about the noise. She heard Wendy stirring.
I'm going to take off, Wendy, called Amanda. Thanks for last night, it was fun, she said, and she meant it.
No problem, just shut the front door on the way out, would you?
Sure thing, said Amanda, gathering her purse. She put on her coat and was on the way to the front door when Wendy appeared from the hallway, running her fingers through her thin blonde hair as if she was trying to wrestle it into shape.
I couldn't let you go just like that, said Wendy.
Amanda halted, unsure. Wendy gave her a hug, and Amanda felt that warmth once again, a warmth she had sorely missed.
I'll call before the next group meeting. Maybe we could get Chinese food or go see a movie, said Wendy.
Sure, said Amanda, recalling that they had indeed exchanged numbers the night before, drunk and proclaiming each other new best friends. Amanda left Wendy's apartment, called the elevator, and rode down to the first floor. By the time she stepped outside Wendy's building, her mind was already racing. She looked back up at the tower of glass and wondered if she should tell her new best friend what she had seen in that room. She knew Wendy's real name now, and she knew they were more alike than Wendy could possibly imagine.